Sinclair took a $4 billion write-down on the value of its regional sports networks. The vMVPDs are dropping RSNs as fast as they can. Is it game over for the channels? And we take a look at Roku's Q3 results. Let's get started.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Video News and Screen Media Podcast. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon from Endscreen Media joins me. Colin, it's, I don't know about you, but I'm feeling a little sleep deprived following all this election news late into the night, two nights in a row here.
I'm feeling great, Will. I've been avoiding it like the plague, to be honest. I knew that the election result would not be resolved, not for at least two or three days, and so I basically ignored it.
Have you really? Wow. That takes great discipline.
not great discipline. I just couldn't bear the stress.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, there's been more happening this week than just the election, though it may seem otherwise. But we want to talk a little bit today about one of our favorite podcast topics, which is sports. And there was actually a little bit of news this week as part of the Q3 earnings cycle that caught my attention. I know it's something you've been focused on, and that relates to regional sports networks.
Indeed, yeah, you did. You had some commentary on Sinclair's RSNs, which have been having quite a tough time getting people to re-sign on, right? And they've done something about this now?
Yeah, this is, I found this very interesting, Colin. You know, the headline here is Sinclair Broadcast Group took a write-down of $4.2 billion this week in their Q3. They announced it as part of their Q3 earnings, a $4.2 billion write-down on the value of their regional sports networks, their RSNs. And just to rewind a little bit so our listeners understand the context here, Sinclair acquired the Fox RSN group from Disney back in, I think the deal closed in May of 2019. That deal itself was actually, that deal itself was predicated by Disney's regulatory concerns. They had to sell off those RSNs as part of the deal to acquire Fox. And Sinclair ultimately won the bidding contest for them. Here we are 18 months later, basically, and Sinclair has written down the value. The original value is about $10 billion. They've written down $4.2 billion, so about 40% of the RSN's value. And it's worth mentioning also, I think just as part of context, that when you go back and look at the original dynamics around the divestiture of those RSNs, there were originally thoughts that they could get about, Disney could get about $20 billion for that group of RSNs. They ended up getting about $10 billion, half the valuation. And now Sinclair has written down 40% of it. So in a sense, the value of those RSNs, you know, the market, chit-chat anyway, was they were worth $20 billion. They're now down to being worth, valued by Sinclair at around $6 billion. So you're talking about something like a 70 or 75% decrease in the valuation of the RSNs. And that's, I think, part of a broader dynamic in sports viewing and linear TV and cord cutting. And that's what I had written about this week. It's interesting to go back and look at Sinclair's original justification for the deal and the valuation that it put on it. And the top priority for Sinclair was exploiting the digital rights. And within that, Sinclair said exploiting digital rights would be putting the RSNs onto new platforms like the virtual pay TV operators and streaming. And that has not worked out at all as planned for Sinclair. Rather than them getting new agreements with these virtual pay TV operators, they've actually lost their agreements. YouTube TV, Hulu, and FuboTV have actually all dropped Sinclair's RSNs over the past year in this 2020. That's in turn caused them to lose millions of subscribers. PlayStation View was also identified by Sinclair as one of these emerging distributors. View also, of course, closed down earlier this year. Sinclair said that YouTube TV and Hulu alone accounted for 10% of its gross distribution revenues in September that have now been lost. I think that the Dish Sling TV deal is actually up in the air as well. I think they may have been dropped or restored. I don't remember exactly where that stands, but that's tentative. And yet another piece of the puzzle here is that they did renew Comcast and AT&T, but AT&T, of course, is rumored to be selling off its entire DirecTV and UVerse and AT&T Now businesses, and that could ultimately impact where the Sinclair carriage is as well. So a lot of turmoil here in regional sports network land, and again, all caught up in the broader trends around cord cutting and users trying to save money. And the virtual pay TV operators have actually been raising their rates. We know that. And they're no doubt trying to contain their programming costs. And that is at odds with meeting up, no doubt, with Sinclair's terms to carry these RSNs, to license these RSNs. So it's been a turbulent time.
It's a really tough time for them, and that's not all. I read today that NESN, a regional sports network in your neck of the woods, was dropped by YouTube TV.
Yep.
And I really think that this is a massive reassessment of the value of that RSNs bring, both directly to consumers and to bundles of content. And it looks like that assessment is rather harsh. That really seems to be pushing down the values a lot. And I think this is probably, certainly this is being impacted, I think, by the situation with COVID and with lockdown and the fact that many of these sports were missing. And even those that are coming back without audiences, which I think does detract from the experience somewhat, although there are some bonuses there as well. I really like hearing the players and being able to hear more clearly what they're doing. But I think that must have had some sort of impact. The other thing is that I think a lot of the value that the RSNs brought, which was the ability to see highlights of games and discussion of local teams and how they were doing, that's really been moved to social media, Will. And there's just a lot now going on social media where people can engage in conversations and understand what's going on with their local team directly through social media. I mean, I look at my behavior with Premier League, and YouTube is an essential resource for me with Premier League. The games I want to watch that are available to me either through Peacock or on NBC Sports Network, I watch live or I watch there. And the ones I don't get to, I catch up. I watch the game capsules on YouTube TV. And so, you know, I think that a lot of the value that the RSNs were bringing into people's homes directly through pay television has moved. Now, of course, the live games are still locked up there. So if you really want to watch, you know, for us, it's the live Sharks game or somebody like that, you're going to need the RSNs to do so. But you know, if you can live without that, or you can live with a game capsule somewhere else, I think that, you know, that's why the sports networks are seeing such a huge reassessment of their value to people.
Yeah, I think all that's right. Of course, you know, we can't underestimate the impact of COVID here. A lot of these RSNs simply didn't have games to offer for a long while, and you know, that's their whole value proposition. If they're not offering the games, then you know, I know Ness and here, they're playing, you know, reruns of old games for a long time. That was what they were filling in with. So there's no doubt that COVID has been a big impact here on the RSNs. But you know, to your point, it's a much more fragmented landscape, and there are a lot more entertainment options. There's a lot more that people can do with gaming, with social media, as you said. the options that people have to spend their time are just have gotten ever more diverse. And that has hurt, I think, sports, linear sports viewing as a whole. And then to your point, being able to stay up to date on game scores and even able to watch post-game highlights and capsulizations of games is both of those have become ever more widespread and popular as well. So even if you miss the game, you know you're not really going to miss the game because there's just going to be so many different ways to catch up on it afterwards.
Right. You bet. I think one of the things that's surprised me a little bit, sort of going off on a little bit of a tangent to talk about what consumers are doing, what we viewers are doing, is just I was expecting people to actually spend a lot more time with live sports when they came back than apparently seems to be the case. I mean, there was a Magid survey sort of in the teeth of lockdown. I think it was mid-May that they ran this survey. And what they found was that, of course, you know, 75% of sports fans said that they missed watching live sports on TV. There's no surprise there. But what they said was that 54% look forward to watching more live sports than they did before. So they're actually, they missed it, they really appreciated it, and that made them want it more, and they saw themselves watching a lot more. But the problem is that it really doesn't seem to have happened well. And so if you look at what happened with Major League Baseball, yeah, the opening game was big, 4 million viewers, much higher than the previous record of 3.7 million in 2017. But it didn't last. Pretty soon the audiences fell back to normal audiences, and I actually haven't gone back and checked to see for the entire season if it was able to maintain that. But NFL was the same. It opened down. So when I looked in October, week one saw ratings 8% lower, and week two ratings were mixed. And I think I did check a few weeks ago, and that things were at best as they were last year, and at worst many of the games were attracting much lower viewers. So that's a big surprise. I wonder, well, bearing in mind that people said that they were going to watch more, this could be a combination of factors. One could be that people really do feel less engaged in those games, purely and simply because there's no in stadium or in arena audience to sort of amp up the excitement and amp up the players in the process. That could certainly be a factor. But maybe, I don't know, maybe one other factor is that people, when those sports went away, the more casual viewers, the less committed viewers, they went off and found something else to do, and that's what they're still doing. They didn't come back when sports reappeared, and they found something else to spend their time with. My goodness, there's plenty to do, right? I remember seeing some Limelight data that said in the US, what was it, 53%? 81% of people, of streamers, binge-watched, and that they spent sessions 2 hours and 54 minutes on average binge watching. When they binge watch for 3 hours. I got a feeling that behavior like that for less committed sports viewers is replacing those long sessions watching games, and those audiences may not come back.
Yeah, I hear you. It's a little early to predict sports demise, but 2020 has been a tough year for sports. And, you know, it's interesting, actually, this Sinclair write-down, the $4.2 billion, that's not the first multi-billion dollar write-down that we've seen in the traditional pay TV world either. Disney took a $5 billion write-down a few months ago related to closing a bunch of its international TV networks as it gets ready to launch its Star international streaming service. And my guess is that there are more write-downs to come. I think that, you know, the fundamental issue here is that the traditional distribution model, pay TV, and the dollars that were associated with that have gotten fundamentally disrupted. And businesses that were based on that model are coming to grips with, they're coming to a reckoning with what that business model is really worth. And as they come to that reckoning and as they shift towards streaming, they're having to revalue these businesses. And, you know, the one that's yet to come, it could be the biggest of all, is, as I mentioned before, is this potential sale or spinoff by AT&T of DirecTV. And that was a $65 or $70 billion deal 5 years ago. And there's rumors that AT&T may get just $15 billion for that business. So, you know, that would be obviously a major rewrite of the valuation of a pay TV business. And my hunch is that there are more to come. But Colin, just shifting topics here, we wanted to spend a little bit of time as we talk about, you know, the shifting valuations in the business and the underlying fundamentals. We're recording here just after Roku announced its Q3 earnings, and talk about a beneficiary of the way that audiences and revenue are shifting in the TV business. Roku is a prime example of a beneficiary of that. You've got the numbers. Maybe you want to just run through quick highlights and then we can spend a few minutes discussing.
Yeah, sure. Happy to, Will. And they increased active accounts by 3 million between Q2 and Q3. And that's a 7% increase quarter over quarter, 42% year over year. So that's big growth. ARPU, that's the amount they're deriving from advertising, also increased pretty well, 8% increase. That's actually really good because bear in mind the ad rates did fall during Q1 and part of Q2 due to advertisers just pulling money and waiting to see what was happening. So they've made a nice recovery there. One interesting thing is that actually the streaming hours delivered only increased a little from 14.6 billion hours to 14.8 billion. But I don't find that quite so interesting, Will. So I sort of processed those numbers. What actually happened was that the streaming minutes per day per active account fell quite substantially. It fell about 6% from 230 minutes in Q2 to 217 minutes. But I don't think that there's anything disastrous happening here for Roku. I think this is just a facet of the fact that people will be going to come out of lockdown and were just simply not in their house quite as long as they had been. And I have to say, it's still elevated from what it was in Q1. That was 209 minutes. So 209 minutes in Q1, 217 minutes today. So it's still increasing. There was one very impressive thing that did happen. And as you say, they were real benefits of people being locked in. And that was player revenue went up. It increased 62% year over year to 132 million. But what was really interesting about that number, Will, was the margin that they earn on the players. They got 15%, which is, I think, their best performance in a long time for those players. Now, platform, which is where their advertising business sits, continues to do well. That also was a big beneficiary. They earned 319 million platform revenue, up from 245 million last quarter. And that's 78% increase year over year. This is a company that's on the way to 1.5 billion this year. I think they may even eclipse 1.5 billion in revenue, which is a pretty sharp increase from last year. So altogether, once again, we've talked. I think we're like a broken record on this, Will, when we talk about Roku, because they really have been performing extremely well over the last couple of years, and they're continuing to do so.
Yeah, we've certainly talked about Roku many times on the podcast. I thought it was worth bringing Roku into the conversation after talking about sports, because a big thing that they zeroed in on in their earnings call and their earnings letter was this macro trend in the shift away from linear TV viewing, which of course sports is so wrapped up in, as we just talked about, sports being a big part of linear being down. And as a result, a lot of ad dollars that would have typically gone into linear now looking to find a new home. And Roku is I think, very much becoming a go-to place for advertisers to place that freed up linear, those freed up linear TV ad budgets. That's very much a theme that Roku was hitting on. And that reflects in the platform revenues, as you said, up 78%. I think they said that monetized video ad impressions grew by almost 90% year over year. And again, I think if you're an advertiser that is targeting younger audiences and you've typically found them in linear, maybe you found them in sports in past years, and they're not there any longer, you have to find a new way to reach them. It's that simple. You have to keep driving your business forward and trying to even potentially get some growth here. And the way that it is clearly unfolding is that, you know, getting audiences on CTV, on streaming, on AVOD is the way to go. And Roku has positioned itself very well to be able to get those, especially as they talk about at length with the enhancements around data and targeting and being able to measure performance and attribution. Those are all bonuses that TV advertisers have not typically had, and they're now realizing that there are real benefits to those. So, you know, it's playing out right in front of our eyes, Colin. The pandemic has just accelerated things this year in 2020 and setting it up for a pretty big Q4 for anybody that's in CTV and streaming, because linear TV is not going to be coming back. We're not going to see much more in the way of sports in Q4 than we have right now. And those dollars have to find a home.
They certainly do. And it's funny you say that they're not coming back. That's exactly what Scott Rosenberg, who runs Roku's platform business, said. He said, this is a one-way transfer function.
Yeah.
And when people leave linear pay TV, they don't typically come back. And there were a couple of things that I think Roku's done really well, and one of the ones is in the measurement issue. They've really been investing a lot of development dollars and investment dollars in their ad platform, and they're really able to offer, I think, things that just very many other ad supported providers online can't yet. One of the things that really stuck out for me in the call was their statement to advertisers that they guarantee that they will not duplicate a viewer in linear. So, you know, they're guaranteeing if they won't charge if that viewer has already been reached on linear, which I think is something that, you know, this unduplication is something that really other people are struggling to add. So I think that's one of the areas where they're really shining and when they've really done something exceptional. The other thing that Scott Rosenberg actually said that was really interesting that I completely agree with, there was a question about ad standards. And he made the point, and I thought it was a very, very good one. He said that, you know, if you're thinking that we're going to get back to a single ad standard like we had back in linear days when linear was the only game in town, when Nielsen was calling the shots, he said it ain't going to happen. He says we're not headed to a world where there will be one currency. And he says that's a good thing. He said advertisers will be able to measure based on how they think it's appropriate to measure. And he called that a good thing. So pretty interesting numbers there from Roku, and all speed ahead for them into the fourth quarter, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, Colin. And I think that may be all we have time for this week. So combination of sports, Roku, major changes in the ecosystem we continue to keep an eye on. So good chatting as always, Colin. And thanks, everyone, for listening in on this week's edition of the Video News and Screen Media Podcast. And we'll see you all again next week.